much for that warm introduction, although I'm going to have to condense that a little bit, I think. And thank you so much for the opportunity to help open the summit on justice and disparities. All of us are leaders in our profession and our community, and we work within a process that is based on fairness, a process that seeks to achieve fairness. So, it is important when we gather at times like this to talk and to think about obstacles that can interfere with our essential objectives, to work to continuously improve, to better meet these objectives. For me, the process of continuing improvement is a primary part of my job. Our court system is an important part of the overall governing of democracy, and the courts can best contribute to the success of this process of governing by giving voice to injustice when we discover it, and to call people into action. Call people into action with the value of justice, equality, fairness, freedoms, the rule of law become threatened. Justice is only pursued within, not only pursued in the cases that are brought into our court system, but justice must also be done within that process of justice itself. So today, I want to talk to you about something that can adversely impact our fundamental values and our process of justice: implicit bias. For the last few years, I've been speaking about implicit bias to judges, to lawyers, and to others. I do this because any form of bias interferes with justice, and we must work to identify implicit bias and remove it from our system of justice, just as we have done with explicit bias. And we must do the same throughout society. Implicit bias is almost always at the heart of the racial disparities that we continue to discover. We will only truly confront racial disparities when we confront our implicit bias. And as important as it is to confront implicit bias, it can be difficult to discuss. It can be difficult because to talk about our implicit bias can often be mistaken for accusations of being prejudiced or being biased, and can give rise to claims that we should be talking less about it. The truth is just the opposite. We should be talking more about implicit bias. We need to talk more about implicit bias, but in a respectful and thoughtful way. And we need to talk about the racial disparities in our society without feeling that it's a put down to anyone. It is none of these things. We must remember that when we talk about implicit bias, we are talking about how our brains work unconsciously, and how it stores up our past, and how it can be often used instinctively to make negative associations about individuals that are not true. So, we must be careful to accept that the implicit bias that we all have is not racism. It is not bigotry. It is instinctive, unconscious thinking, and can even involve thinking that runs counter to our stated values. But it can result in unintended bias. This, of course, only reveals its complexity, and it reveals that it will take time and much effort to understand and to overcome. But to do this, we need to be able to talk about it without being negative. We need to talk about it in a way without being critical to others, and we need to understand it so that we can act more in ways that are consistent with our collective constitutional values. If we do not talk about it, inequality only threatens to remain hidden in society, and racial disparities will only grow. Let me tell you about one effort currently underway as an example of what can be done to address implicit bias and racial disproportionality. This effort shows that solutions can often be as simple as minimizing the consequences. 3 years ago, a majority of the high school students in Davenport, Iowa, that were referred to the juvenile justice courts for criminal acts were African American students. Even though the African American population in Davenport is less than 5%. The consequences of these referrals are far more than just disproportionate numbers of African American students entering into the criminal juvenile justice system. When juvenile offenders find their way into a criminal justice system, too many never get out. Too many are often then hindered by a criminal record and end up having fewer opportunities in life, a life that then contributes to further disparities. Based on research from Georgetown University, we established a new process of dealing with school referrals. Instead of directing juvenile offenders into the court system, we created a juvenile diversion court for first-time misdemeanor offenders. This diversion court places offenders into a community program, and the courts work as a team alongside the schools, the police, community providers, and parents to provide rehabilitative services. The results could not be more promising. In 2015, the Davenport school system and the Davenport police diverted nearly all juvenile offenders charged with misdemeanor crimes into the community program, and the recidivism rate was only 16%. In 2016, every youth in the city charged with a simple misdemeanor was diverted into the program, and the recidivism rate has been only 7%. The community program addresses the needs of offenders by bringing families into the court system and the community program to interact with their children, and by working with offenders to build on their strengths and to get new insight to prevent future mistakes. A new understanding from this process is being achieved, and criminal records are being avoided. This new approach is an entirely different paradigm shift that utilizes the science of the adolescent brain development in a positive way, and it shows signs of reducing racial disparity formerly associated with the treatment of juvenile offenders. And importantly, the juveniles themselves see it as fair. At the same time, it is important to see that the Davenport experience is an example of how we can talk about implicit bias and how to deal with the data showing racial disparities. Because when faced with this data, the disproportionate referrals of African American students, the school system and the police and the community leaders did not seek to justify it. They did not seek to view it in any demeaning way. They did not seek to deny implicit bias could be at work in the referral of African-American students in disproportionate numbers. Instead, they were brave enough to work to fix the problem, to eliminate the consequences. And what they are doing today is becoming a model for other communities. Recently, a similar model was instituted in Waterloo. The good news in all of this is that justice is a belief that is a part of all of us. You feel it, and I feel it. We want it for ourselves and for others. And this too, this feeling comes from our brain, the region of the brain that is responsible for our feelings of reward and pleasure. It means that our instinctive pleasures in life is for life to be fair. And it explains why our founders proclaimed that the very aim of government was to establish justice for all and to create a more perfect union over time. So, while implicit bias can unconsciously work against equality, our implicit justice that it lies within each of us is there to work for equality. This is the human trait that we must now rely upon and use to overcome the implicit biases that interfere with our collective belief in equal justice for all. For our part, all Iowa judges have now received training on implicit bias and are beginning to undergo another more intensive round of training. We want to become better decision makers, and we know that this can be done by understanding implicit bias and by seeing others free from our implicit bias. But it does not end with judges. All of us need to better understand the perspective of others, free from implicit biases that may hinder our ability to see that understanding. Jurors, too, need to make decisions free from implicit bias. And for that reason, the Iowa Supreme Court has encouraged judges to instruct jurors on implicit bias, to sensitize them to its existence. We all benefit. We can all benefit and give ourselves and our government the best opportunity to eliminate racial disparity throughout society. On December 1st of 1955, Rosa Parks ignited a civil rights movement that ended segregation in this country. Although she was but a passenger on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama on that day, she became a driver of a movement that advanced justice consistent with our constitutional promise to become that more perfect union. She was not the first refused to yield to the law and give up her seat on the bus and pursue her claim. Others had done that before. But she was the first to transform that moment into a movement that opened the eyes of our nation to the violence in all forms of segregation that is inflicted on our collective belief in equality and fairness. Today, we too can use this moment, this summer, to create a movement in Iowa to confront and eliminate all forms of racial disparity that do violence to our collective belief in equality. Maya Angelou said, "We are only as blind as we want to be." We can no longer be blind to racial disparity and implicit bias. The time has come for everyone to open their eyes to the injustice of racial disparities and to come together to be the drivers of a movement that eliminates those disparities and bends the arc like never before to achieve that promise of justice for all. Thank you very much.